You are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
Go on riverboat gambling trips.
You're going to die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner Wednesday, September 8th, 2021. Follow us on Twitter at ChickenXDinner, Instagram at ChickenDinnerSP, and smash the button so you get the podcast once it drops. We will talk to Teddy Greenstein for Points Bet as we recap briefly week one of the college football season. Look ahead to Ohio State and Oregon, Iowa State, Iowa. And there are two promotions at Points Bet you should know about. One of them is No Juice September. That's right. No minus 10. No minus 15, all September. Details coming up later on in the show. No Juice September in the NFL. I'm going to start dropping these shows. We decided yesterday at Nesson, Wednesday and Friday mornings. That's a decent plan going forward, so we get the full day Monday and Tuesday to see the market sort of shape itself. We can also gather information about injuries and all that jazz. So Wednesday and Friday early seems to be the move this football season. I used to try and get these out. I remember back in the day, we were doing Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and those episodes would drop at like 3 p.m. Eastern, and you didn't have much shelf life on those shows. So this gives us a nice little scenario where if we drop it Wednesday morning, you can get ready for Thursday night football. We drop it Friday morning, you're ready all day Friday and into the weekend. So that's going to be the move going forward. Wednesday and Friday drops. And if anything changes, we'll let you know. Hell, something might change. They just changed my TV days up, Wednesday and Friday nights now. So this will be a little bit easier. Do podcast Wednesday morning, Friday morning, and get ready to rock and ready to roll. Hell of a start to the football season for Chicken Dinner. 3-0-1, three wins, no losses, one tie. Obviously, that success rate is not going to stay. We're going to lose some games here and there. We're going to lose a lot of games this football season, as long as you understand that. Everything will be okay. But Nebraska, Illinois under. Minnesota, the push, plus 14. We had that lock of the century on Eastern Washington, UNLV over that took two overtimes. And Iowa, my favorite pick so far this season, minus 3.5. I liked Iowa days before kickoff because I thought Indiana was overvalued. We talked about this. Then on Saturday, you get some information about Michael Penix Jr., the quarterback for the Hoosiers, that his knee is nowhere near 100%. And somebody told me he might not even play. So then I go into full-out reporter mode for about 3 hours on Saturday. You're trying to confirm something you can't confirm for hours. I texted guys I know who went to Indiana. I had a cousin who knows a guy, who knows a girl, who knows a cousin. And it's like you're trying to confirm something that nobody's going to tell you. And the information was true. Penix was nowhere near 100%. He didn't even try and run the football outside the pocket. And Ferentz simply dropped coverage. Go ahead. We dare you to run, kid. And he never ran. He was awful. I think 14 of 31, no touchdowns, three picks. That game was over at half. He probably shouldn't have started. And then about an hour before kick, we found out from somebody who works with the Hoosiers that Penix was definitely going to play. I would argue Indiana would have had a better shot if Jack Tuttle played. But it's okay. It helps us. Capped off a 2-0-1 week, which still wasn't good enough for some people. Sunday night, ND Florida State. Psst, who do you like? Like nobody. Sharps took Florida State. That's it. I don't like it. I'm not playing it. Monday night. Hey, who do you got? Ole Miss, Louisville. Nobody. That was the hardest part for me as I grew to this position. Understanding that just because a game is on national television, you don't have to fire a wager on it. But some of you still will, and I understand it. It's all fine and dandy. If you're looking for 25, 50, 100 bucks on a primetime game, I'm not going to stop you. But I always think those are the toughest games to beat. So I'm not going to just jump in and get the itch on a Monday at 3:30 Eastern and go, oh, there's a Monday night game tonight. Let me fire out a pick. it just doesn't work that way, at least on this show. So that's the way it's going to shake out rest of the season. Doesn't make me laugh, though. Haven't lost a pick yet, and it's still like, hey, what do you like? Florida State in the over? Sure, I guess. Did come through. Jack Cohn. Still can't get over Jack Cohn. Didn't he break the single-game passing yardage mark at Notre Dame? And Wisconsin just kind of, go ahead. We're going to go with this guy, Graham Mertz. You can head on over to Notre Dame. Skill players a lot better for the Irish than they are for the Badgers. That's for sure. I'm not a big parlay guy. Those of you that listen to this show know that I'm never going to tell you it's a good idea to make a 14-team parlay, but some people win these sometimes. And there was a $10 parlay, 14 legs, that won almost $80,000. Have you heard about this? David Payne Purdom had the information on Twitter. Reportedly no hedge, too. Purdom tweeted, on August 24th, a better place, a $10 14-leg parlay, all of them college football unders, and this bet was placed at WynnBET. The first 13 legs hit. So last leg was Monday night. It was Louisville Ole Miss under 75.5. Parlay would pay $79,935.70. And Purdom said there was no hedge at WynnBET. That's what caught my eye. It's like that scene in The Wolf of Wall Street when DiCaprio's like, I'm not fucking leaving. That's essentially what that was. I'm not hedging. There's no way. I'm not going to pump this parlay up because I think if you make 14-team parlays 365 days out of the year, you might win one. You probably won't win one. But this person wins and you tip your cap. It takes stones, though, to not hedge that. And that's the story that I take from this parlay. I would have certainly hedged something. And we don't know for sure if this person did or didn't. Just because they didn't hedge at WynnBET doesn't mean there was no hedge somewhere else with a local, with a PPH, with whatever. But it takes stones not to hedge that if they didn't hedge. Ole Miss 43, Louisville 24. That is 67, and that is an under. Whew. $10. That's like a coffee now, isn't it? I don't drink coffee. Two coffees, maybe? Coffee and a half. $10 wins $79,000. That person will never win a 14-team parlay again. But guess what? It doesn't matter. The math is in their favor. You can make a lot of $10 parlays. I just hope that that person realizes how lucky they got and doesn't start. You know, this is what happens with people that win parlays. And I've known locals for years that have always appreciated the people that play the parlays. Because what happens is somebody will make a $20 parlay and win, let's just say it's $7,000, okay? So that $20 bet that made you $7,000 that you pulled out of nowhere all of a sudden turns into a habit where you're now making $100 parlays or $125 parlays because, wow, that was easy. And before you know it, you know, five parlays at $20 a pop gets you to 100. But now you're betting 100 a parlay. You make 10 of those and you lose all 10. Now you're down 1,000. So that 7,000 you made, yeah, it's great. But now you're down 1,000 from that 7. You don't think about it that way in the moment, but that little $20 bet that made you 7,000 is like, oh, well, I'm still up. Okay, well, you just knocked away 10 parlays at 100, so you lost 1,000 from that 7. And we don't think about that. So always, if you're parlaying or whatever, just try and keep a pattern here. Don't raise the stakes five times because you win a big parlay. Those people then, and then it's like, well, maybe I'll just bet, you know, I'm down 500. I'll bet 500 on Monday Night Football or Sunday Night Football. You lose that. You're down 1,000. Well, I'm still up 5,000. When you start justifying your bankroll with, well, here's what I won and not here's what I have, that's when you get in trouble. So if you do win a parlay and you bet $10 and you win $600, don't start betting $100 a parlay. Your chances of hitting another parlay are so small. So why would you raise your stakes? You want to keep chipping away $5, $10 parlays? That's fine. But when you go from $20 to $100, and there's a repetition level there, that's when you get in trouble. And that's what the books are counting on. A lot of money, though. $10 to win $79,000. Look over here. Look how much you could win. Got three already for our sake. Illinois, plus 10.5. Iowa State, minus 4. Steelers, plus 6.5. Those are straight, by the way, not parlayed. Those are chicken dinner bets so far at Chicken X Dinner. I'm leaning Oregon at a number of 14.5. I saw Circa had 15. Still waiting to hear on Kayvon Thibodeau, who is potentially the number one pick in the NFL draft this coming spring. That kid is the goods. And if he's out, all of a sudden, I want no part of the Oregon side. But you look up, Westgate has a hook, DraftKings a hook, Bookmaker, Pinnacle, BetOnline, Heritage, all have 14.5. Total 63.5. Circa's got a 15. The thing to remember about Ohio State is that that game was super close in the first half against Minnesota. But two things happen. Number one, Ibrahim for Minnesota ends up blowing out his Achilles. And he had 160 or so yards in that game. Third quarter, he's out of the way. The other thing that I didn't realize till I went back and watched it, Chris Olave was essentially facing a third-string walk-on cornerback in the second half. Minnesota had some injuries in that secondary, and I didn't even realize it at the time. So the best receiver on the field is essentially being guarded by me. And that's why he sort of went off in that second half. Minnesota secondary, not good enough to stop Ohio State. Oregon secondary is better. You need two things, really, to match up and keep a game with Ohio State close. You need a pass rush, which Oregon typically has, and they will have if Thibodeau is in there, along with Noah Sewell, some other guys in that front seven. But you need corners, specifically corners with size and speed that can make it interesting as these Ohio State receivers do their thing down the field. Minnesota had an okay pass rush, and their secondary was not great. Oregon matches up a lot better at those two positions. You worry about Oregon, though, because the offense was really slow. Now, was that by design? Did Joe Moorhead not dial anything up? Was he saving the kitchen sink for Ohio State? You tend to think so. Anthony Brown played better late, and that's a game Oregon really should have handled a lot easier, Fresno State. But maybe they saved some of that stuff for Ohio State. It is still fundamentally a redshirt freshman quarterback, C.J. Stroud, starting his second collegiate game. That's the truth. So if Oregon, again, team speed-wise, they've got the goods. Oregon could take the opening kickoff back, and it's 7-0. Oregon's got guys that can make you miss and go. This will not be a mismatch in speed. Ohio State just has better players, notably in the trenches, and they've got better receivers, and historically they have better linebackers. But all of these linebackers for Ohio State are mostly new. So this defensive pattern, still sort of figuring everything out. Ryan Day is just a killer, though. And that team is never going to take its foot off the gas. They've proven that since he's been there after taking over for Urban Meyer. That guy will be up 7 going into the fourth quarter. They'll win by 28. And you're like, whoa, what happened to my plus 14.5? So I still lean Ducks. Just not ready to pull the trigger yet. You know about Illinois. We've talked about that on Twitter. Brandon Peters going to play. Chase Brown going to play. A couple other guys going to play. We got a good number. Took 10.5. Circa was down to 9 yesterday. Illinois, Virginia, 305, 306. And that's a game where Virginia could win this game by 4, 7, 10. I don't think they're going to win by 2 touchdowns. Of course they can, but more times than not, Illinois is going to keep this thing close. And I do like Bielema as an underdog as opposed to a favorite at home. Illinois goes from underdog to touchdown favorite to 10-point underdog. Quite the roller coaster so far as numbers go for the Illini. And then Iowa State, look, there weren't many people on Iowa last week. Not many at all. The books needed the Hawkeyes big time. Sharpies came in, they took 5.5. Public caught on late, knocked it down to 3.5. And we ended up laying what? Did we lay 3.5? Yeah, we laid 3.5. Market got the 4. Iowa closed 4. That game was never close. Problem is, when the team that nobody wants to bet becomes the team that everybody wants to bet, that's when it gets problematic. I had people that were like, how could you take Iowa? Iowa stinks. Iowa doesn't have an offense. Blah, 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 blah. And now it's, you know, we tweet out Iowa State minus four. How could you bet against Iowa? Real simple. Watch. It's actually already done. Iowa State is a top 10 team at home laying less than a touchdown. When do you see that? When? Iowa's a good football team. They're not a great football team. They were helped by three awful Michael Penix turnovers, one of them that was tipped by a receiver and then picked off and taken to the house. But they had, what, 21 points off turnovers? They weren't really all that great on offense. They had the one run. Goodson went about 70 yards for a touchdown, broken play, got a good block and just kicked it down the field. Turn on the Jets, for that matter. But Iowa State, very good defense. Good offensive line, Brock Purdy, Breece Hall, Matt Campbell calling the shots. It's a good buy low spot on Iowa State. And now I got all the Iowa people coming into the timeline. How could you pick against Iowa? It's not personal. Iowa's stock was low. They win 34-6, and now nobody can fathom betting against Iowa. Oh, they're getting points too? Well, yeah. And that market opened, Circa opened Iowa State 3. Within 2 minutes, it's 4. And now the board is looking like 4.5. And I did see a 5 on Tuesday. Mostly 4.5s offshore. You got 4 Circa, 4 Westgate, 4 South Point, 4 Caesars. But here's the number that I'm concerned about if you're looking to back Iowa. 80% of the tickets at a lot of shops on the Hawkeyes. So Iowa is shaping up to be that public underdog. Be careful there. Just be careful. And I do like Pittsburgh in the NFL. This is one of those spots where, if you remember correctly, these two teams played last season late. And Pittsburgh was about a 1.5, 2-point favorite on the open. Buffalo ends up closing as the favorite. Buffalo wins big. That game was in Pittsburgh. I can't justify, though, giving this Steelers defense 6.5 points. They're going to keep this game interesting. So, Pittsburgh now goes to Buffalo, week number one. Buffalo, public darling. They just went to the AFC Championship game. People are talking about Josh Allen for MVP, Bills to be a sleeper for the Super Bowl. And we forget that the Steelers last year were undefeated for the first 3 months of the season, 3.5 months of the season. And that defense will be rested, and Big Ben should be fresh. It's just not a great spot. And if you're talking about a play where the books are going to need the dog, this is one of them. I see South Point's got a 6. I texted Chris Andrews. I go, why are you at 6? Because I had a really sharp outfit come in and bet me with 2 hands. He was at 7 on Pittsburgh. And these guys came in and blasted Pittsburgh. And he goes, they know what they're doing. And I love these lines that are just under a key number on the dog side. When there's a favorite at home, -2.5, I lean to the dog. When there's a favorite at home, -6.5, not 7. Why is it not 7? Well, because there's respected money keeping that off 7. And I don't think we're going to get back to 7. If anything, by Sunday, I believe that'll be 6 across the board. Because some guys will come in and take the hook. Some are waiting for 7. I don't think, from what I can gather, I don't think it's going to get there. And that total coming down too, 51.5 on the open, down to 48.5. This game is going to be physical. Pittsburgh is going to play smash mouth football. I know they've got a new offensive line. 3 guys that are new, 3.5, 4 guys, right? Still, Pittsburgh, good coaching, good schematics. Najee Harris, physical back. Defensively, Pittsburgh's going to be tough to move the ball on. So this will be a spot. Well, I'm going to take the points, +6.5, with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Did you watch Alabama over the weekend? Man, they're just on another level. That spread opened 16, closed about 19.5, and Alabama's up 10-0 in the first quarter. 17-0 a minute into the second, 20-0 with 11:40 to go in the half, to which I tweeted at that point, If you're thinking about live betting Miami, here's your warning. Cut your losses. Alabama then scores a touchdown to go up 27-0. And it's like this team is just, they're fake sometimes, especially in week ones. If you haven't learned by now to stop betting against Alabama in week one, you're never going to get it. And I thought this was a great tweet, Tom Casale. Remember when Alabama couldn't throw the football and their quarterbacks didn't even get drafted? They won a national championship with Jake Coker. Insane. I agree, at the Tom Casale on Twitter. Couple more quick things before we get to Teddy KGB. Rice was up 17-7 midway through the third quarter. The Owls were catching 20. So if you do the math, you're up 37-7 with the spread. Rice lost 38-17. Arkansas, first and goal, under a minute to go. They go for the touchdown. They get it. Zero reason to go for it, but they get it. Razorbacks up two touchdowns. They want blood, and they want you to lose. They get in, and they cover by a point. Laying 20, win by 21. The bet was covering for 59 minutes and loses in the final minute. Oh, sorry, Ted Rice. Todd Furman, at Todd Furman, posted an interesting question the other day. Where do you plan to bet most of your sports this fall? Legal regulated book? Local bookie? Offshore shop? Other. Legal regulated book led the way 46%. Bookie 27, offshore 22, other 4.5. This makes me wonder about all these surveys that you see pop up from time to time that ask you, do you bet on sports? Around half the people in this poll say they're going to bet legally with a regulated book in the States. So when some survey says that 1 in 5 American adults are going to make a wager this football season, that's probably a low number, right? Because a company like the AGA, the American Gaming Association, they're likely not talking about betting with bookies and offshore outs. I can't confirm that, but that's my guess. More Americans are going to gamble. I say 1 in 5 legally. More than 1 in 5, all things included. And 30% of you going to still bet with the local? That seems low too. People love credit. People love that credit. Don't got to settle till the end of the week, end of the month. There are some locals still I know that are offering minus 110 on teasers. That was the sauce back in the day. A lot of people have smartened up. And a lot of the American books now, if you want to do a teaser, 6 point, 2 team, minus 130, minus 135, forget it. I miss those days with the 6 point teaser, minus 110, go from 2.5 through the 3 and 7 up to 8.5, or go from -7.5 down to -1.5, minus 110. Those were the days. Those were the days. Those days are disappearing before our very eyes. Last thing. The Big Sky went 7-0 against the number against the FBS teams last week. This tweet from Betts Stats, B-E-T-S Stats. UC Davis plus 22, outright winner at Tulsa. Weber State plus 28. Eastern Washington, my guys, -1.5. Southern Utah plus 44.5. Northern Colorado plus 37.5. Montana State plus 19.5. Montana plus 22.5 outright at Washington. Portland plus 25.5. 7 up, 7 down. The Big Sky sweeps the board, ATS. And I'm telling you, Eastern Washington is going to be a team you don't want to mess with this year. That's going to be a team I'm going to be on quite a bit. Just need those numbers to pop up into the market. It must be football season when you talk to Teddy Greenstein from PointsBet, senior editor at PointsBet USA. He's on Twitter at Teddy Greenstein. And we both just learned, unfortunately, we've got some skin on Minnesota. They are without their starting running back for the rest of the season. This is our life, Teddy.
That, poor us, exactly. It's not that Minnesota or Mo Ibrahim is out for the year. We don't feel as badly for them as we do for us. Now, I took a flyer on Minnesota to win the Big Ten West. Obviously, looking at last year, the fact that Northwestern did it, that Darren Revelle got him at 200-1 I was like, all right, I think it's going to be Iowa, but, you know, let's take a shot. So I think I had Minnesota at 25 or 30. Maybe it wasn't that high. But look, the Gophers still performed well, earned the push against Ohio State, 14 points. But that is a blow because he's a terrific player, the best on the team and arguably the best running back in the Big Ten.
I was watching your video on social media, taking sides. You almost swept Perlman to oblivion. You had Georgia, you had Penn State, and you had Minnesota. You and I were lockstep on a couple games last weekend. I thought Minnesota was a great bet, and then all of a sudden it wasn't. And I think this is something that bettors have to understand. You can be right and wrong. You can be wrong and right. It's part of the game. The handicap on Minnesota was great because they were pummeling Ohio State in the trenches before Ibrahim gets hurt.
And then in the end, I was happy just to get a push because Ohio State's obviously driving. That's that weird moment as a bettor where you're actually hoping Ohio State gets first downs so they don't have a fourth down and field goal range and make it a 17-point game. So I was okay with the push there. Meanwhile, I think I got pretty lucky on Penn State plus 4.5. I mean, Wisconsin should have been up 10-0 at the break and just completely, you know, failed in the red zone. But I'm with you. What I call it sometimes is right pick, wrong result. When, you know, a game ends and you've lost your bet, but you can look at it and you can say 7 times out of 10, I would have won that bet.
I've got a couple Midwest related stats for you. I'm just going to throw them at you and you react. Is that cool?
Great.
Northwestern gave up 326 rushing yards.
Pathetic. The guys who were most missed after this weekend, one, Trevor Lawrence at Clemson, because DJ Uiagalelei was very indecisive. And two, Mike Hankwitz, the Northwestern D coordinator who was a part of 400 victories and then retired and is no longer with the Cats and is no longer coaching. And Northwestern all of a sudden went from like the best defense in the Big Ten to completely unable to tackle against Michigan State.
Jack Cohn throws for 366 yards and 4 touchdowns.
I thought Tess did such a great job on that game last night. You know, we just make assumptions about players. Oh, Jack Cohn, he's a game manager. You know, if he throws for 218, it's going to be a good game. Guess what? That's what he was at Wisconsin. That doesn't mean he's like that when he's got good skill guys at Notre Dame. So happy for him. And it sets up a potential amazing game between Notre Dame and Wisconsin at Soldier Field.
Illinois loses to the Roadrunners of Texas San Antonio.
Yeah, not shocking. You know, you saw that line crash. You saw UTSA at kick was what? Maybe they were getting only 5.
4
Illinois,
in some places.
4. There you go. Illinois was good enough to whip up on Nebraska. It says a lot about Nebraska.
Here's the thing, though, and I'm not necessarily a zigzagger, but I'm perception reality guy. Nobody was on Illinois against Nebraska. Nobody. The public was just writing.
They were writing.
Well, the public, though. The general public was mostly. You're sharper than the general cat. Nobody was looking to bet Illinois against Nebraska. And then everybody was betting Illinois against UTSA, even though the sharps, you know, the money was on the Roadrunners. The public was on Illinois. And I'll tell you what, public's going to be off Illinois at Virginia. And they might get Peters and Chase Brown back. I'm already in on Illinois plus 10.5. Do you agree or disagree?
I wouldn't touch that yet. I need to study Virginia a little more. Obviously, 1-0, just beat William & Mary. Supposed to be sort of a middling ACC team, over-under win total of 6.5. I want to look at that. I want to see how maybe Brett Bielema has done against Virginia coaches. I'm the first to admit when I screw things up, but I'll say this. I was all over Illinois against Nebraska. There were so many things I liked there. I thought that line should have been close to a pick 'em, and Illinois was getting 7 at home. I liked the fact that Brett hadn't been in college football for a while, so he was going to have the advantage prepping for Scott Frost. But I laid off UTSA Illinois because, yeah, that's a classic U of I spot where, you know, those players think, oh, we're really good, man. We're 1-0 in the Big Ten. And don't respect a team like UTSA that is much better than people understand. So I didn't touch that one.
I had Illinois fans telling me after they beat Nebraska, 9-3. Chill out, man. Chill out.
Let me. One of the strongest memories of my life was it was a year. It ended up being Zook's last year. So I'm driving to Champaign, and it's Northwestern Illinois. And I made the big mistake of driving there with two Illinois fans, one of whom was a friend and the other is a friend of a friend. I'm like, you know what? I really generally don't want to spend time with too many nutty Illinois football fans, but I'll take the free ride. You know, who wants to drive 5 hours if they don't have to? So Illinois wins the game. And this drunk friend the entire way back is just shouting, 6-0, 6-0, 6-0. He keeps waking me up. That was the year that Illinois like lost six games in a row and Zook got fired. So their fans can be a little over exuberant. Beating Nebraska was nice, but you shouldn't have assumed it was going to carry over to last Saturday.
I want to take our listeners behind the curtain for a second. I'm texting you last night. I'm hearing about Peters and Brown coming back and telling you, hey, here's a number that's good. And you're like, bro, I'm still on week one. Notre Dame's on.
Exactly. And that's why I said that's the difference between a sharp like you, who is just analyzing those opening lines and trying to find an early edge, and me, who's like, do I want to bet this Notre Dame game live? And I'm still in total week one mode. Like, if you had asked me last night, like, I didn't even actually know who Illinois was playing week three this coming Saturday. So you're telling me, is that good at 10.5? And I'm like, I don't even know the opponent. So that is the difference between a casual guy like me and a sharp or wannabe sharp like you.
I don't think I'm that sharp, but I think you're being a little humble here. We can move to week two now. I think it's week two, even though it's the third week of games. My girlfriend goes, what's week zero? I'm like, I have no idea.
You're right. It is week two coming up.
Oregon, Ohio State opened 14. I thought that was dead on. I thought that was a very good opening number because you're not, if you open at 12, the books are going to write it up to 14 no matter what.
Yeah.
If you open at 15 or 16, sharp guys are going to bet it down to 14. So the bookmakers, Circa, they just came out and said, here you go. Here's 14. That's a pretty good line, I think.
Doesn't that just feel like a nice neutral line? I don't know if that's a term in the betting world, but let's create it. And it's just what you described, one where, look, I think everyone is always scared not to bet Ohio State for the example we kind of talked about, because in the third quarter, you know, Ohio State is not only losing in terms of the 14-point line in Minnesota, they're losing the game. And yet you feel like you could snap your fingers and all of a sudden, if you're a Minnesota plus 14 better, you're just hanging on for dear life and happy with a push. So you always feel uncomfortable betting against Ohio State because they can score, you know, four touchdowns in a quarter. Flip side, are the amateur bettors out there going to overreact to Oregon barely beating Fresno? Like, Oregon went in this year with high expectations, some people picking them to win the Pac-12. They barely beat Fresno, I'm sure in part because they were looking ahead. So, yeah, if that line is 14.5 or 15, the sharps are going to say this is a classic overreaction and take the Ducks.
It's a great number. Two things to focus on. I'm trying to learn, and we'll learn more when we get closer to Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, about Kayvon Thibodeau and how healthy he is. I need to know that before I pounce. The other thing, I watched that whole game, Ohio State, Minnesota. Do you remember when the Gophers corner went out in like the second quarter and they put essentially Teddy Greenstein on Chris Olave? That was a nightmare for them.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, you know, those coaches are, they're so smart. Look, everybody would know that you pound it to Chris Olave if he's being guarded by Teddy G. There's no doubt about that, but you feel with that Ohio State coaching staff that they could just drop them onto an NFL team and that NFL team would thrive. Those guys are no joke, man. They always know what they're doing. So, and those receivers are incredible. So if CJ Stroud was able to get through that first game, he looked good. And now have arguably the two, you know, the best receiving tandem in the country going up against Ohio State. Then it's going to be hard to take Oregon in the points there.
No surprise, Iowa State total opened 48.5. I'm looking at the board right now on a Monday morning as we tape this, 45s and 44.5s.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing about the Iowa defense, and that was one where I proposed that game to Sarah Perlman, And because I loved Iowa, I thought Indiana totally overvalued going into the season, and she wisely laid off that one. You and I texted last week, so we were both in lockstep there. Now, I was just reading Scott Dockerman's story in The Athletic, and this is, speaking of stats, this is one that I really would not have known if you'd asked me. All right. Since 2018, Iowa has allowed 547 points. The next best number nationally is Washington at 594. So the Hawkeyes are 47 points better than any team in the nation. And Saturday was the piece de resistance, because not only did they hold Indiana to 233, they made Michael Penix look like that was his first start, you know, in a college uniform. He was completely baffled. You know, the corners were going off their guys, intercepting passes, two pick sixes. It was just a beatdown. So this is an interesting one. Now, I think this line, the look-ahead line, was closer to a touchdown. I thought I saw it at maybe 6 or 6.5 before Saturday. Mm-hmm. Do you have any recollection of that, Sam?
It was higher than 4, 4.5. That's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, to me, if it's over a field goal, how do you not take the Hawkeyes? I mean, why is this line not like 2.5 to 3?
I still think under's the move, even though you sort of miss the 47, which is a key number. A lot of people will look at that box score and go, well, Iowa just scored 34. But really, yeah, two of those were pick sixes, and another score was off of a fumble or something. They had 17 or 21 points off turnovers, and that Iowa offense total, they had 303 yards. But, I mean, that's, you're not going to get that against Iowa State. Doesn't that have all the makings of 20 to 17 either way?
Maybe. I mean, look, Spencer Petras was just 13 of 27 for 145, but look, the game was basically over at the half, so it's hard to judge Iowa's second half offense, because they didn't, you know, Hawkeyes didn't have to do anything. I'm not a big total player. So do you play totals as much as you play spreads?
We played two totals so far and two sides on Chicken Dinner. So far 50-50, but it depends. It depends on the situation.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to go down swinging, and I want to go down swinging on spreads and money lines. And I will occasionally dabble with a total, but I feel like I win about a third of them. So the more I stay away, the better.
All last week, I did multiple radio hits and TV hits, and everybody, of course, is going to ask you about Alabama-Miami. It's one of those marquee games. And I said on every single platform, there was a stretch from 2012 to 2015 where I thought I was the smartest guy in the room, and I bet against Nick Saban week one. And I thought, you know, in that little stretch, he can't possibly do it this year. He can't do it again. And then you look up every week one, and it's 31-3. It happens every single year, Teddy.
That's right. It's funny. I mean, I listen to several podcasts, yours first, but I also do listen to Pete Thamel, Pat Forty, and Dan Wetzel. They do a good job. And Forty picked Miami plus the points. And Thamel just eviscerated him. And he's like, people are going to look back on this game on, you know, as soon as it's played, and they're going to say, Pat, I cannot believe you got suckered into taking Miami. Like, if Miami's quarterback, Derek King, I think he's 24 years old, like, if he was any good, he'd be in the NFL. You seriously think Alabama is going to come out and not just railroad these guys? And of course they did. So, you know, you talk about go down swinging. Here's what I remember last year. I was joining a book, and started out with like a $500, you know, quote unquote, risk-free bet. And I'm like, I just couldn't decide what I want to put it on. Finally, I said, you know what? I'm putting it on Alabama against Georgia. And I believe Georgia was getting 3.5 or 4 last year, and they were kind of trendy. And I'm like, nope. When it's all on the line, you take Saban. Now, obviously, he doesn't cover the spread every game, but you feel good when you're putting it on the Tide.
That Alabama first half is the gift that keeps on giving. Woo. I want to say the last 15 games, they've covered the first half 13 times.
Yeah, that's right. Because second half, weird stuff happens. Like, Alabama didn't end up covering against Ohio State last year, was it? Like, you know, yeah, there are ones where where sure, Nick takes his foot off the gas and is just managing it and trying to win the game and not trying to cover. But that's a great point, man. Bet that Alabama first quarter line or halftime line. And now, by the way, going back to something here, right now at PointsBet, you can get Iowa plus 4.5. So I think as soon as this call is done, sports betting wife might jump all over that.
Some offshore shops are at 3.5 and a lot of four. So you should always shop around. And in this case, PointsBet has the best number.
And it's minus 110. It's not like you're paying anymore. Minus 110 on Iowa plus 4.5. Jump on it if you like the Hawkeyes.
Would you ever lay 33 points with Purdue on the road? That's what they're laying at UConn. Doesn't that just sound wrong?
I mean, UConn is such a flipping joke. Why is Randy Edsall allowed to decide when he is stepping away and retiring at age 63? It's like, dude, you just got fired. You're like one of the worst coaches in America. I despise that guy. That guy, when he was at Maryland, he'd go on the Big Ten calls, and it's just a combination of like arrogance, lack of information. Then, of course, he's known for having these ridiculous contracts where he gets an extra $2,000 if, you know, his third string tailback gets 5 yards. I am perfectly happy to see UConn just go down in flames, lose to Holy Cross. And maybe that's one of those. I'll just put it on Purdue, hoping the final score is going to be 70-6 or something like that.
That's what I call a personal mission. It's very personal there. is he the least favorite coach that you've ever covered?
I'd say Charlie Weiss is number one for the least favorite coach. You know, I was there. It was like a snowstorm the day that he was announced in Notre Dame. And what I remember about his first day was he talked for 25 minutes before taking a question, which was just so typical him. He thought he had every answer. He thought he was so much smarter than everybody else. Fast forward about 5-6 years later, and I wrote the meanest stuff about him that I've ever written about anybody else. I mean, I was like, if he loves Notre Dame as half as much as he loves himself, he'd retire. You know, he'd resign right now. He played a game. He coached the game against USC, and Notre Dame's first down was the final play of the third quarter. That's how bad Charlie Weiss was in his later years at Notre Dame. So I think he's the all-timer in terms of lack of accomplishment and just kind of a jerk to be around. And he ended up making, what, $40, $50 million on all these Kansas and Notre Dame, all these people who were dying to pay him money that he didn't deserve.
He's doing just fine. I'll tell you a funny story about Charlie Weiss. He came to Mount Carmel when I was in high school. He was recruiting a linebacker named Steve Filer. He actually got both Steve Filer from Carmel and Darius Fleming from Rita. He pulled them both out of the Catholic League. Charlie comes to Carmel. We're eating lunch in the Convocation Center, and there's two sets of double doors, butterfly style. So if you want to hold the doors open, it takes two people per set, two and two. He had four kids in Notre Dame polos holding doors. So every door was held for Charlie as his fat ass walked in the building.
The arrogance was so much. So what happened was, so like everybody at the Tribune, starting with me, was ripping him so bad that Notre Dame finally asked our sports editor and a bunch of us to come to South Bend for a little, you know, for a little face to face. And so we show up there, and there's this big kind of like boardroom type setup. And Charlie is wearing a sweatshirt. He's got his feet up on the table. He's drinking like Pepsi or Diet Pepsi and like burping. And I'm like, this is the Notre Dame football coach. Get this guy out of here, man. This guy is not worthy of the job. He's not worthy of this school.
Tell me what's going on this weekend at PointsBet. We have a lot of Chicago listeners in the audience. I saw last week you guys did the No Juice Saturdays for college football.
Yeah.
I imagine there's something similar. NFL kicking off Thursday night, a full slate on Sunday. What can the Chicagoans do this weekend with PointsBet?
Sam, our huge push is with the NFL. So we have No Juice lines on every NFL game in the month of September. They're not up yet. They're going to appear 48 hours before kickoff. So right now I'm looking at Cowboys Bucks. That line is 7.5. And if you look at it, there's a minus 115 and a minus 105. So wait to bet this game until, you know, sometime Tuesday or Wednesday when the no juice line comes up. I mean, I think it's incredible that we offer no juice. Like when I found out that, you know, when we all learned that online sportsbooks were going to become legal, I figured with like the taxes and stuff, we're going to be seeing minus 113, 14, 15. Knowing how Illinois taxes everything, I thought, oh, great, it's going to be minus 118. Nobody's going to want to bet it, and it's going to be pointless. But we're able to offer no juice, so that's huge. And then one other thing, speaking of Illinois, as you know, you can no longer sign up via mobile. You have to go to one of our sports books. So the good news there is that we're having these events because we want to get people in the door, and I'm going to be there. So on Saturday, we have Devin Hester coming to Crestwood. It's called Club Hawthorne Crestwood, and that's 1 p.m., Devin Hester. And then this Sunday, get people ready for this Bears game, Lance Briggs, 4:30 p.m. on Sunday. So if anybody wants more information, follow me at Teddy Greenstein on Twitter or the PointsBet account, PointsBet Illinois account, but come on out to Crestwood. It's a pretty cool sports book, and you know, meet some Bears legends and enjoy college football on Saturday and the NFL on Sunday.
And that video wall is beautiful down there.
Yeah.
Beautiful. So much to do there, so much going on, and the no juice stuff is, it's great. I mean, rather than lay 110 or 115, some books 118, no juice. It's going to save you money and put you in a better spot. Teddy KGB, always good to check in with you. You know, the last thing before I let you go, we have to make sure that we both beat David Kaplan in the Chicago Media Super Contest. If he wins, I'm going to riot.
You're speaking to the choir, and here's why, doubly why. Because last year, Cap and I had a head-to-head battle. And if memory serves, he nipped me by a game or two. So we had some side sauce on that. So I think I had to cough up another hundo or something like that. He started out on fire last year. I was like, who's making these picks for
right?
you?
Yeah, not him.
You must have researchers or a staff or something. So, yeah, man, let's get our heads together and crush Capper this year.
Good luck this weekend, man. Have fun.
Loved it, Sam. You're the best. Talk to you soon.
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Thanks to Teddy Greenstein from PointsBet. No juice. That's a good thing, especially for the month of September. And that's something, if you're in a PointsBet state, you may want to take advantage of. Record check on our show. We are up 3.1 units, 162 and 152. And we got three now. Illinois plus 10.5. Iowa State minus 4. The Steelers plus 6.5. Probably going to add a couple more Thursday, Friday, maybe Saturday. We shall see. We like to keep it low, keep the volume low, and really bet what we like. That's the way it goes. Not going to fire 12 picks on a football weekend. I'm trying to stay between 4 and 6 usually. So we'll see how that shakes out. Coming up on Chicken Dinner, Friday's episode, Chris Andrews, South Point Sportsbook Director. He will join us. Great conversation with Chris. He's been on the show, I believe, the most. This will be his 5th appearance. Always fun chopping it up. We sat in his office out in Las Vegas in late August, and we'll bring that to you in a couple days. Cash up tickets, make some money. We'll talk to you then right here on Chicken Dinner.